to sound like Buck Martinez, Teoscar Hernandez.
Teoscar Hernandez.
Fill the void. The Brewers acquired William Contreras in the biggest heist trade I've seen in years. Xander Bogaerts would be in a Red Sox uniform right now. Well, maybe not now because it's the middle of December, but he would still be on their roster.
Just lounging in a Red Sox uniform. And welcome to episode number 254 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we have noticed that things happen right after we record since 2013. It's tradition's important, right, Josh?
Absolutely.
I'm your host, Greg.
We have our thing, and we got to let people just stick with that.
I am Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined, as always, by the unpredictable Joshua Howsam. Tonight's agenda, we have hopefully an abbreviated podcast, because although things have happened, it's not the hugest list of things. Blue Jays signed Kevin Kiermaier, outfielder for the hated Tampa Bay Rays, no longer. They signed Chris Bassitt, ex-Oakland A and New York Met, for the starting rotation. We wave goodbye, folks, to Ross Stripling. Farewell, sweet prince, we hardly knew ye. We talk about what's left, because now that some chips have fallen, that might make the picture clearer as to what options the Jays have left on the table. We take a bunch of your questions, and then we have a do-over for Red Sox president and CEO Sam Kennedy, who, not a real studious quote from him, we'll put it that way. But first, Kevin Kiermaier. How are you feeling, Josh?
Well, so obviously we have a little more context for this move, but just it's still the offense. So I can't properly answer this question yet. There's what Kiermaier brings to the table is, I mean, he has established it for a very long time. He is the best center fielder defensively in baseball, maybe one of the best in the last few generations, easily the best to wear a Blue Jays uniform since Devon White. But he doesn't stay on the field a lot. He hasn't reached 130 games since 2015. He's only cleared 100 games twice since 2017. He played 50 games in the COVID shortened season, so he stayed healthy that year. And he's coming off hip surgery, so his ability to stay on the field is very much in question.
Which is fair. And he used to be a reasonable offensive threat and a fantastic defender. And now we're down to, provided the hip surgery was successful, we're down to fantastic defender. Which is to say he's not the, you don't want him as your everyday starting center fielder, do you?
Right. And this is what I was getting at, where I can't actually say what I think of the move yet. Because in a vacuum, there's nothing wrong with getting Kevin Kiermaier. He's, like we said, he's an excellent defensive center fielder. And as recently as 2021, he was a league average bat. So those two things combined makes for a very useful player. But he hasn't been a league average bat in 4 of the last 5 years. And as we said, he's very injury prone. So if he's plan A for center field, then it's a problem. If he's one of the options for center field, say in a platoon with, well, George Springer being the other center fielder, but with someone else off the bench coming in, when there's a righty or lefty on the mound, that's a much more palatable option, because then you have, you know, another outfielder, which we'll get to in a bit, but then you have someone else to come in for performance reasons and for when he inevitably has to miss some time.
Yeah, he's a piece of a puzzle that we, like you said, we don't have all the pieces of yet. So it would be, if this is how the Blue Jays go into spring training in the outfield situation, this was not enough. But but we don't think that.
Yeah. Now, one thing that should be mentioned, this does fit very well with what the Jays have stated is a goal of this offseason, which actually really started with the Teoscar Hernandez trade, which is to get much better at run prevention. which can mean pitching or defense. And in this case, obviously it's defense. The Jays were not a very good defensive team last year. They had extreme shifts that they employed, especially in the outfield, to mitigate some of their shortcomings. And they actually worked more than they didn't, but I don't know if you could say it was a success. And they still had, by just the individual player defensive run save stats, one of the worst defensive outfields in baseball. So Teoscar Hernandez, who was one of the biggest offenders, is gone. George Springer is a competent center fielder, but an excellent right fielder. So he has now moved to right. Kiermaier is in center. Much better defensive outfield. So it does align with what they stated, but now they just need to work on some of the offense.
Yeah, we got time for that. Speaking of run, is that, I think that covers Kiermaier, potentially.
I think so, yep. Arnie Bass, left-handed, important.
yeah, hard to come by sometimes. So, speaking of run prevention, Chris Bassitt, he knows how to do that. Like, Chris Bassitt, I feel like, is one of those guys, because he played a ton of time in Oakland, you've never thought about him unless he was on the mound against you in Oakland. That's me as the, you know, the Blue Jays fan versus the baseball fan talking.
Yeah, and even when he went to New York, the Mets, last season, it didn't come across as, oh, the Mets have picked up a star pitcher. It was, oh, they picked up a good number four behind DeGrom, you know, Scherzer, Carrasco, right? He was their second best pitcher because DeGrom was hurt for most of the season. And he has basically been the exact same pitcher, basically going back to 2016 or 17. And he even took steps forward with the Mets in his pitch mix. So I think that while he's not a household name, and I mean, he'll become one for Blue Jays fans just by being on the team.
Yep.
He should be. I mean, he's a very, very good pitcher.
Yeah, he also doesn't dazzle with stuff, right? A 93-mile-an-hour fastball and the ability to locate it very, very, locate all of his pitches very, very well is how he gets to where he gets. So it is not, you know, he does not have the curveball of Clayton Kershaw. He does not have the, you know, even though he has a mix of pitches, he doesn't have like 12 of them like Yu Darvish. So I think, unless you watch him on a regular basis, maybe he's not the easiest guy to talk about and sing the praises of. He just gets results.
Yeah. And we should mention the contract. It was a 3-year deal for $63 million. It's exactly the going rate for a pitcher of his quality. You could argue it's actually given this market a good deal because the guarantee is lower than what Jameson Taillon and Taiwan Walker got. And I think he's better than both of them. And you talked about his pitch mix being how he gets by. It's very similar to Ross Stripling in that sense, but just better. He has an elite sinker that he uses to get weak contact. He's not a big ground ball guy, you would think, for someone who has such a good sinker. But in terms of the average exit velocity that he gives up, he's in the 95th percentile on the good side. So it's the fifth percentile actual number. And that's just an extreme ability to control what is happening off the bat, which, you know, a lot of people think you can't do, but you can. And Alek Manoah on the Blue Jays is a great example of this.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, Manoah and he, in terms of not having elite fastball, but getting elite results, kind of seem similar, at least on the surface.
Yeah, Manoah throws harder, but it's the same idea. It's not a big bat missing fastball. It's not coming in at 99-100 miles an hour. One of the interesting things about Bassitt as well, he has pitched in pitcher's parks. Citi Field is a pitcher's park, and Oakland definitely is. So there is some potential regression, you know, that could be happening towards his road stats, which are a little worse than his home stats. But he also has played with some shaky defenses. Chris Black, at Down to Black on Twitter, who works for Sportsnet, tweeted this out. He did a whole thread about Bassitt when the Jays acquired him. But one thing he noted, which was very interesting, is that he said that no pitcher in baseball allowed more base runners on grounders to third last year than Bassitt. And he qualified. This wasn't line drives past the third baseman. It was ground balls to third. And the Blue Jays have the best defensive third baseman in the American League.
And they have him for a reason, right? I'm sure Bassett was a target because they knew that they wanted a defense, or they already had pieces in the defense behind him that would support the kind of contact he gets.
Right. And this ties back into the Kiermaier acquisition, where, again, Bassett doesn't get a ton of ground balls for a sinker baller. He's still ground ball heavier, but they've increased the defense at two positions in the outfield by signing Kiermaier. So they have a decent selection of guys that rely on contact suppression for outs. So you need people who can actually turn those balls in play into outs.
Those of you who have not remembered, the shifts are effectively limited in many, many ways this year. Those rules come into effect in 2023. So the Blue Jays can't, quote unquote, game the system the way they were last year to make up for those inefficiencies.
Well, they could still do it in the outfield, but they can't do it in the infield. Well, although they can't use the four-man outfield anymore.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you can't put that fourth guy in the outfield. So that was a lot of what they were doing in the outfield to really try and mitigate things.
Yeah. And the infield shifts, you can still somewhat cheat it. That thing where they say it's not a shift on TV, which drove me crazy all season, where the second baseman is just to the inside of the bag, so technically he hasn't crossed it. It's still a shift. It's just not a banned one now.
Yeah. It's a much less efficient shift.
Yeah. So that actually will be interesting to watch as to how it will affect guys like Bassett and Manoah. But getting better defenders is, as we mentioned, how you mitigate that. And I'm really happy with this move. I think that we talked about how the Jays needed to get a good pitcher. I said it on the last episode that the idea of just making the guy they get be Ross Stripling was not enough for me. We'll get to Stripling in a minute, but I wanted them to get someone who could raise the quality level of this rotation, especially if Barrios doesn't bounce back. They needed someone who could be a legitimate, reliable number three starter. And there weren't many of those on the market, and the Jays got one.
Yeah. Now we should talk about the, not the this year downside, but the potential downside of the contract is that Bassett is already 34 years old. So he will be 34 in, I think, February. This is a contract in which you are going to be paying a 37-year-old pitcher in the final year of the contract. I know that's 36-year-old pitcher in the final year of the contract might not get you the value that you were hoping for at that point. But I don't think the Jays are overly concerned about 3 years from now. I know none of the fans are, but that's the only downside. I mean, certainly better than a 4 or 5 year contract for some of the other guys on the market. So.
And that was the interesting part. There were rumors that Bassett was seeking a 4-year deal, which, given everything else that was happening on the pitching market, wasn't crazy. But he lines up now very well with the free agency ages, they could get extended, of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, which means that there's no chance he will be dead money when they need to resign those guys. And I think given the fact that Gausman and Barrios will both be in their mid-30s while those contracts, when that time comes, not having another one of those guys on the roster was very good planning. They might have actually stretched the average annual value of the contract to get 3 years, which is the exact opposite of what these tax teams have been doing with all these other contracts.
Yeah. All right, let's break my heart. Just say what happened with Ross Stripling. I don't know if I can even say it, Josh.
You left your heart in San Francisco?
Oh, no.
It worked perfectly. I didn't even think about that when you said that. Ross Stripling is a San Francisco Giant. He signed for 2 years and $25 million today. We're recording this on Tuesday.
So,
and yeah.
You win.
No, I didn't want Ross Stripling back.
No, you win in the aspect of how much his average annual value was short of what the qualifying offer would have been. So you win.
Okay. So there was this thing going around that the Jays should have qualified Ross Stripling, and people saying it was a mistake that they didn't when the pitching market went the way it did. clearly they did it right. I mean, yeah. The qualifying offer was 1 year at $19.8 million, and he got 2 years, $25 million. And the Jays ended up with a better pitcher. That said, I would have loved if Stripling came back with Bassett as the number five. Would have made the Jays a really strong pitching team. They still could be, but it would have really solidified the question marks in the rotation if you don't have Kikuchi and White battling for that five spot. But I don't think the Jays were ever going to give him this deal after signing Bassett. And I think it's a really good deal for him and a really good park for him to, he has an opt-out to really just go and show that he can pitch 160, 70 innings as a full-time starter and then hit the market again next year and really cash in like Bassett did.
Yeah. So I just, you know, want to say mad respect to Russ Stripling for really from a rocky first season here, you know, having some problems, getting beat up by the Red Sox, turning into a real gem by the time he left, and doing everything that the club asked him with a smile on his face. I'm going to miss him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Chicken Strip was just, yeah. he leaned into the nickname. Everything about this guy was just exactly what you wanted as a fan rooting for a player. Really smart, really, really funny in interviews, actually, too. But he'll just have to, we'll just have to root for him before. Thank goodness he went to the National League West so we can be like, yeah, Stripling, you go do well.
Yeah, you kick butt wherever you are. Just, you know, we don't have to worry about it, at least until, you know, game 168 or something. Worst case. Okay, so that is what's happened. We alluded to this, but a couple of things still need to happen for this to be to look like a successful offseason. And I guess the other one is there needs to be a bat to fill the gap that Teoscar Hernandez left, right? We've more than filled his defensive prowess, but somehow you need to get his production back. And his production was not insignificant any of the last 4 years.
No, Teoscar Hernandez was one of the most, I just sound like Buck Martinez, Teoscar Hernandez.
Teoscar Hernandez. Fill the void.
Yeah, he's retiring potentially, so I have to fill the void of saying names wrong. But yeah, Teoscar Hernandez was one of the more productive bats in the outfield over the last 3 or 4 years. So replacing that isn't easy. They're going to try to replace their value with defense so far. But the clear need is a slugging left-handed bat. Or it doesn't have to be slugging. They have to be a power hitter, but just a very good hitting left-handed bat. Ideally one that can play the outfield well. Because if they can move Lourdes Gurriel to the DH, so say they sign, like they're obviously the hypothetical free agent that people keep talking about is Michael Conforto. If they could put Conforto in left, Kiermaier in center, and Springer in right, that's a really good defensive outfield. And then Lourdes Gurriel can just be a fun hitter with his, make his cocktails on the bench during the defensive innings too.
But it also gives you that flexibility if those two guys who have had injury trouble, right? If you end up with a George Springer off for 2 weeks or Kevin Kiermaier off on the injured list, moving Springer to center and Gurriel into left and Conforto into right isn't the end of the world, right? You've upgraded everything, so you have a little bit of flexibility before you go dipping into the Jackie Bradley Jr. zone and wondering where all the offense went.
We did that a few too many times last year. Heck, I always said when it was the Raimel Tapia zone, although the chaos energy was fantastic.
Energy good, results bad.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Michael Conforto is the opposite of that. But yeah, I think that that's really important, that they have to be someone who can handle the outfield for the, to cover the injury risk that does exist with Springer and Kiermaier. And also, Kiermaier probably shouldn't be playing every day against left-handed pitchers. Not that he's actually a platoon problem. He's pretty bad against both righties and lefties. But Santiago Espinal and Whit Merrifield are both very good against lefties. So you could play Springer in center, Conforto in right, and Merrifield in left when there's a left-hander on the mound and get Espinal in there. It gives them the opportunity to platoon at different positions and use their pretty strong bench if they get someone like this to, you know, to improve things further.
Yeah. That is on the, you know, the offensive defensive side. Is there a pitching move yet to be made in your mind to really make this all work?
Well, this is the really fascinating part of this, because there is still a big question mark with Yusei Kikuchi and Mitch White. I'm pretty happy with that in a sense. Well, happy is not necessarily the right word. I'm optimistic that both of them are much better than we saw last year, because their track records say that they are better. But if you really want to try to win a championship, you probably don't want to be counting on that.
Yeah.
There's a financial question. How much money do the Jays have to spend? And then there's the catchers. I think that there could be an element of just whatever they can get for the catchers, because some of these teams that they were fits with to trade have fallen off the board. The Brewers acquired William Contreras in the biggest heist trade I've seen in years. Okay, I'm just going to tangent for a second. So a lot of people were looking for Murphy's trade return, because he was the number one catcher on the trade market, Sean Murphy. Somehow the Brewers weaseled their way into this three-team trade and ended up trading a decent-ish high contact speed prospect for a power hitting, slugging young catcher and two relievers, just so they can facilitate the Braves getting Sean Murphy.
It does seem unbalanced when you put it that way.
We didn't do the stinger. This is a gold star. This is a gold star to Matt Arnold running the Milwaukee Brewers, because he should just get executive of the year right now.
Okay, wait. Here you go.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
He has earned it, and I think he will enjoy it. Back to what it means for the Blue Jays.
Right. Yeah, catchers. We have some of those on the roster.
So the sports world was looking for, or Blue Jays fan world, I should say, and the writers, what Sean Murphy was going to bring back. The A's return is terrible. But the actual trade return that the Braves send out, very strong when you include William Contreras in it. But it took the Brewers off the board, who were a very good match on the pitching side. And I don't know that the Diamondbacks are a great match on the hitting side anymore, because most of their outfielders are good defensive center fielders. You don't really want to replace Kiermaier with that. So I think that they will do what the best they can there. And that if it's a pitcher, then they'll get another pitcher. Otherwise, I expect they'll roll the dice with Kikuchi and White. I hope they get another one, though. I'd be very interested in that.
Absolutely. All right. Given all of that is our summary, you folks have questions. So in a minute, we're going to come back. We're going to line them all up and we're going to answer them, I think, one by one, as we usually do. Though occasionally you ask the same question, we have to answer two at once. We'll be right back. Then they send me away, teach me how to be sensible, logical, oh, responsible, practical. And then they show me a world where I could be so deep. Oh, and we're back. After having reviewed Josh's gift choice for the tweet that asked all of these questions, I'm afraid he's been fired. I'm going to be doing the rest of the podcast myself.
Oh.
But then I realized I don't know the answer to some of this stuff. So first, the questions.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
I mean, we take comments as well as questions. First one from Matt G at Jays Lightning 79 said, I expect the Jays to trade a catcher right after the Turf Pod is released. LMFAO. We kind of do also. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if that happened within 24 hours. So, Matt, more power to your strong expectations. The first question is from Luke at Split Letters. What big move / signing would cause you two to be immediately out of date, keeping with the theme? And then in brackets, I'm feeling much better about the offseason now, winky face with tongue out. I gave Luke a very hard time on the last podcast, didn't I, Josh?
Oh yeah. So deserved. He was jumping off. You had to pull him back from the ledge. He was really close.
I'm glad we're still on speaking terms. So that's good, Luke. What big move signing? Have the Mariners or the Padres traded anyone in the last, say, 72 hours?
Oh, probably.
Those two teams are amazing. I'm going to say, I feel like somehow Seattle will trade for Sandy Alcantara from the untouchable.
But that doesn't make us out of date. We don't talk about Mariners moves. I think Matt G's got it. One of the catchers can get traded between when we have recorded and when we release it.
Wow. Going all in.
But that just made us not out of date. It's one of those cyclical things where you can't be right.
If you're right, you're automatically wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we just cursed the podcast. Cool. Minor Leaguer at minor_leaguer says, not a Blue Jays question, but about you. How are you two doing? What are your holiday plans?
Greg?
I'm doing all right. Having a good time, trying to keep myself amused when I'm not at work and trying to not, lose my mind when I'm at work. I think that's pretty much what we're all doing, right? Holidays? It could be nice and quiet. Just keeping it small this year. The in-laws for dinner. Open some Christmas presents. And you, Josh?
Not quiet. We're hosting Christmas for the first time in our house. And so we have been very busy trying to make it hospitable for my wife's family who are coming to visit, including her sister, her parents and sister. And then my sisters and brother-in-law and my wife's cousin are all coming for dinner on Christmas. So that will be very busy, but fun. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be the first time I ever cooking a turkey. So hopefully that goes well.
Well, when it's going poorly, you just phone me up and I'll explain you how to do it properly. Cause I taught my mother-in-law how to not dry the turkey out to death. So if I can do that, I can accomplish anything.
Greg is a hero.
Now, finally, acknowledgement I deserve. Next question.
This is because you fired me. This is how I have to get back in your good graces so I can be on the next episode.
Darth Blue Jay at The Real Senate. I did not know there was a Darth Blue Jay. Welcome to the show. Which millennial pit will be your millennial pit of choice at the newly redesigned Rogers Center? Oh, did you see the footage of the destruction? Did we talk about that?
I like the way you worded that. Construction, Greg. Construction.
No, first the destruction.
It is destruction. They did have to destroy the current outfield of the stadium.
It's pretty well
destroyed.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know there would be so much concrete coming down, I think, was my misunderstanding.
Well, if you saw what they're planning to do, I don't know if you really looked closely at the renderings. They are completely reshaping the 100 level and the 500 level.
Mm.
So those things had to come down. The millennial pits that Darth Blue Jay here is referring to, I assume, are these seating areas that are not, or they're rather communal areas that have tables as opposed to actual seats. I will not be in any of them because I have good seats and I don't. Blue Jays Twitter is like, well, we're doing a meetup in the flight deck. Have fun, guys. My seats are in the 12th row. You guys are good.
I am a bit confused by baseball as a social event that you like pay attention to the game out of the corner of your eye. Like I've never gone to a game, paid nearly $100 for a single seat, and wanted to spend the majority of my time A, not in that seat, and B, having a bit of a time with people. Like I'm focused on the game because I don't go to many games. So I am also Gen X and not a millennial. So I guess I'm not really qualified to hang in the millennial pit anyway.
Sorry, Greg. Now you're fired. But I do understand the concept. I'm with you. Like I said, I'll sit in my seats and watch the baseball. But baseball is a slow-moving game, which does lead itself very much to being social, more so than really any other sport. Football is close because there's a long time between plays. And I think that's just it's not so much the people who have the $100 seats that are going to be going up there. It's the people who are spending $15 on a 500 level seat. It's a similar vantage point, and they can be hanging out with some friends and make it a good for $15. 3 hours of hanging out with your friends and have some drinks is not so bad, and watch a baseball game.
Yeah, just don't factor in the cost of the individual drinks.
Yeah, smuggle your own in because it's not good.
Colleen Evans at Colleen Evans 6. Hi, Colleen. What trade or signing has surprised you the most so far this baseball offseason?
Wow. There have been a lot of them. A lot of really unusual ones. I think Xander Bogaerts signing with the Padres was probably the craziest one to me. Just because I got them going after Judge, right? They need an outfielder. And there were rumors they threw money at Trey Turner. A lot of money at Trey Turner. But Trey Turner was also the best option. He just brings so much to the table. So I thought they would probably just stick with Tatis at short once they missed on Turner. And then they signed Xander Bogaerts for 11 years for $280 million. So that one shocked me a bit.
For me, it was the Red Sox. Now it's not even on the list. Maybe it's not official yet. Sorry, what was the name of the Japanese?
Masataka Yoshida?
Yeah. There has always been so much, like, news around postings in the past, right? There's always this period of, oh, is it going to happen? Okay, it's happened. We have a chance to bid. This could happen. And I don't know if they changed the process or what, but like, hey, he's posted, any sign. What? Did you even breathe between those two sentences? That was very strange to me. I was like,
There was definitely some tampering going on there.
Yeah.
there's no way they were not talking to Scott Boras about Yoshida before he was officially posted. But
yeah,
there are no tampering rules that, you know, there's unfortunately his Japanese baseball team cannot file a claim against the Red Sox. So too bad.
Well, and they get their posting money anyway, right?
Yeah.
Every time I go to read this, I get confused. But at Bud J Rap. 67 is the Leafs, 93 is the Blue Jays. What's 19?
Raptors.
Ah, there we are. Thank you. The Jays free agent signing so far could be classified as high floor signings as opposed to high ceiling. I think that's fair. Who would you consider as another potential high floor free agent? What about the potential of a high ceiling free agent? Which do you think is more likely for the Jays to pursue?
Ooh, I don't know if I'd agree with the original classification. I don't know that. I think that Kiermaier and Bassett, well, Kiermaier especially, is more of a high ceiling in the sense of, because if his floor is he doesn't play.
He's but also on his the floor.
Yeah, right. although I guess the floor, when you talk about his skills, is that he's an elite defensive center fielder, and that is something that's not going away. So, okay. But Bassett, I think, has a combination of ceiling and floor. I think that his actual performance over the last few years, he's been one of the better pitchers by most of the metrics in baseball. So I think it was one of them was FIP that had his FIP was better than Gerrit Cole's. I hate FIP, but to be in that conversation says something. As for the free agents, I think it's the two outfielders, Conforto and Brantley. Conforto's the high ceiling, Brantley's the high floor. That's Michael Brantley and Michael Conforto. The Michaels.
Where does Johnny Cueto fit on that?
I would love I did that for you. I would be so happy if the Jays signed Johnny. He's my favorite non-Blue Jay player, I think. He's got to be high on the list.
Johnny Cueto.
No, it's just Cueto. There's Cueto. Cueto. It'd be really sad not being able to chant at him that in the playoffs because I wouldn't want to do it if he's on the team. But that was one of the best times I've ever had at a baseball game. He would be a high floor guy.
Fair enough. You know what you're getting, but he's old enough that you're not getting any more than that. So there's our high floor guy.
Yeah. And as for the which is more likely, I don't think there is one. I think it's both. I think they'll just take whichever one they can get on the better deal.
Yeah, I really wonder at this point if it's more likely the catcher trade fills the gap than an actual free agent signing. Because we haven't seen a lot of trades, and we know that that seems like a real surplus for the Blue Jays.
And there is something we should mention, which we didn't in the top part, that we don't actually know what Kevin Kiermaier signed for yet. The expectations are that it's going to be 1 year in the $7 to $9 million range, somewhere in there, maybe 10. If you go on the outside of that, the Jays are right up against the CBT. So if they are actually going to cross it, they may as well cross it by $15 million because the next threshold is not for quite a bit. But if they are not going to, then it's definitely going to be a trade.
But remember, it's not a salary cap.
The Jays have to make another move when they officially sign Kiermaier and Bassett, because they can wait as long as they want to do that, as long as the terms are agreed to. But once both of them are on the roster, they'll be at 41 and the max is 40. So someone will have to go off. I expect they're waiting until a trade of multiple 40 man guys to officially sign those two.
Which is again why I'm, psychic and thinking trade.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So that concludes our questions round, which means we get to move on to, I think, what has become my favorite segment over time, now that Swing and a Drive just, doesn't work because Dan Shulman doesn't say things like that.
Wait, just to interrupt you, we're going to have to go back and just get a collection of Swing and a Drives to really send Bach off into the sunset. He actually officially retires.
Yeah, I think we're gonna play a 10 clip game of all the best Swing and a Drive moments, and we'll see how people. We'll bring a patron on, or maybe we will bring Nick on, and we'll put you guys.
I think
to the
we
test
try to
again.
Get Chris Sherwin back on because one of the original players of the game.
Yeah. Do you think he still listens?
No. Definitely not.
All right. Now I'm going to go to the do-over, which I think fits Krusty very well.
Oops, I said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet.
But what if you could do it all over again?
But what I really meant was...
So, in regards to Xander Bogaerts, Sam Kennedy, the president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox, was asked, "Do you regret the early negotiations?" And he said, "I try not to look back. You can really harm yourself or your plan and harm decision-making if you get too caught up in regrets in the past or any type of fear of the future. What we're trying to do in the moment is make the right decisions." Now, I'm thinking, Josh, that one of the ways that we make decisions is by thinking, and I could be wrong here, about the results of previous decisions.
Yes, there is a famous quote. "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." I've noticed that neither Mookie Betts or Xander Bogaerts is still wearing a Red Sox uniform. Sorry, Matthew Corey, but this is a harsh truth. They did the exact same thing with both of them. Maybe because they don't look back and see what went wrong. And I really worry for Rafael Devers. Well, I mean, I don't worry. I mean, it'd be great as a Blue Jays fan if he leaves Boston. But for the Red Sox fans, I very much worry for them when it comes to whether Devers will be in the uniform in 2024, if this is the way their president talks about these things.
Yeah. It's like, I could learn a lesson about what happens to a young superstar player when you treat them a certain specific way. Or I could just blindly march forward into the next one who's up on the docket. Yeah, I could do both things. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and as for what actually happened here, because some of our listeners might not know, Xander Bogaerts had an opt-out in his contract that he was due $20 million a year for the next 3 years, and he opted out. Prior to the season, the Red Sox offered him one extra year at $30 million. So a four-year, $90 million deal. He wanted to stay. He told Boras that he wanted to figure something out, and that's what they came back with. It wasn't in the ballpark. There's no chance that he was going to sign that.
No.
And he ended up getting 11 years, $280 million. If the Red Sox had just offered him 6 years, $140 million. What they gave to Trevor Story for some reason. Xander Bogaerts would be in a Red Sox uniform right now. Well, maybe not now because it's the middle of December, but he would still be on their roster.
Just lounging in a Red Sox uniform.
I don't know what he likes to do. He could be. He might actually still be in one right now. Maybe he's lamenting his decisions. But and then so it came out this year that Devers, again, approaching free agency at the end of the year, was offered the Matt Olson contract, which was $20 million a year for 8 years. Rafael Devers is going to get 300-something million if they don't learn. The same thing is going to happen. That is the do-over. Actually learn from your mistakes.
We know that's a tall order, but it comes with the added bonus of us letting you come on the show and speak to how much you've learned. And I think that in itself is practically a reward, really, not just getting to do the duo.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Tell you what, we'll even let you play swing and a drive if you come on and do it.
Okay. So we roll into the end of another successful podcast, except I have not asked you for your final thought yet.
Yeah, so one thing I didn't mention when it came to Chris Bassett, he has not made more than 30 starts in a season since 29, well, ever. He only became a full-time starter following his 2017 Tommy John in 2019. The three injuries or the three reasons he has missed time. He got a line drive off the leg. He got a line drive off the face at 115 miles an hour. And he got COVID. So he actually, so for one thing, this guy is the toughest guy in the world. Apparently he was texting his teammates from his hospital bed as they're putting his face back together saying, I'm sorry, I couldn't finish the game. He's apparently a fantastic teammate. And that's just something the Jays really needed always. Like they seem to focus on this character thing. But anyway, there's not a lot of mileage on his arm because he's had all these random fluke injuries. So he actually might be a little healthier than your average 34-year-old.
We shall see. I think for my final thought, I think this trade of a catcher, if it happens, and I do expect it to happen, just because it's probably not fair nor optimal to have one of those three guys sitting on the bench all year, or in the minors all year, in Moreno's case, is going, strangely enough, to define the Blue Jays offseason, because everything else has been kind of patching holes that we were all in agreement on. And the catcher trade has the real chance to change the complexion of the team now, for sure. So I'm actually kind of excited and kind of worried. Both of those things.
That's pretty fair. And then there is really the possibility that they just keep all three of them. They keep saying that they don't have to trade a catcher, which feels like posturing, right? It feels like they have to say that for their trade market. But I'm starting to think they might believe it. It seems crazy, right? The idea that they would keep all three of them. But if they don't get a good trade because all these people are signing catchers or trading for them in different ways, you know, Mike Mizunino signed with Cleveland, so they're out. The Twins signed Christian Vasquez, so they're out. Who knows? Maybe it's just the people they want to trade with don't want to trade with them.
I mean, Kirk can DH. We found that out already. All right. That is to say that you have been Joshua Housen at Joshua House, and I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010, and this has been Artificial Turf Wars episode number 254, and we will talk at you when something happens, or in a couple of weeks.